Buckley immediately discovered something unpleasant about this freedom. Without the company of others to temper his feelings, he fell rapidly into deep melancholy. Wandering some distance along the shore, he sank face down on the sand. He had crossed the narrow little peninsula separating the bay from the ocean, and the surf pounded in his ears. The breakers pushed his mind further and further back. With his body fragile from a Spartan diet, his mind began to follow its own path. Vivid images of his past tumbled through him, his heart sinking with sorrow that it was all gone forever. It was a kind of death. After a few hours, he found a high shrub bearing a kind of wild raspberry. He could feel energy begin to flow through his body. There was indeed hope for him now. After some weeks of this existence, he had to confront the fact that he was becoming miserably lonely. He had achieved what Robinson Crusoe, whose tale was well known to him, had achieved. He had fire, food, water, shelter, and some clothing. But the future had to lie with human society, be it ever so humble. The next morning he crossed the little stream and, as he approached the beach to resume his journey, came upon something that, unaware though he was, would change his whole life. On the bank of the stream near the sea was a mound of earth. It was a grave, and stuck in the top of it was a spear. Buckley stood and looked at the spear and grave for several minutes. He was afraid of robbing the dead, but the spear would be a very real asset to him. A weapon with which to hunt, or perhaps to defend himself, was something he had needed all along. In his immediate situation, it was so easy to grab and use to lean on as he dragged himself along the beach. He took the spear and marched on, using it as a walking stick. Unknown to Buckley, as he was picking his way around the tree trunks and limbs, knocking pieces of bark away, two pairs of dark eyes watched him from only a few yards away. Buckley had completely resigned himself to this life and was living in a state of perpetual astonishment. To his own amazement, he was fairly contented. He felt at home in the daily life of his tribe. His old clothes were gone now and he lived as they lived, naked much of the time, wearing a skin rug when it was cold, sleeping on the ground in all weather and only occasionally suffering the slightest poor health. It was to him quite miraculous. He had not only gained his freedom and survived, he had done it so well. He could laugh really, especially when he thought of the slavery of his shipmates, or worse, those still in England. He approached slowly, looking the three whites in the eye, one by one, and glanced around, nodding to the Bengali. Finally, he stood before them and let them inspect him for a time, and then seated himself with dignity, his weapons held between his legs. He heard one of them gasp an astonished query about what on earth he could be. Another of them came forward and asked him questions. They could not make him out at all. His distress quickly changed to mirth at their innocent confusion, and he had to bite his lip to stop himself from laughing. He still could not remember anything to say to them. After they had all talked at and about him for some time, one of them came over to him with something in his hand. He held out a crisp, edible-looking substance and said, "Bread. Do you want some bread?" Buckley looked at the food. Bread. Bread. Yeah, bread. His memory began to return. He repeated the word, "Bread," and a cloud appeared to pass from over his brain. Marin Maru, the platypus, shy and vulnerable, has had to retreat to the most remote mountain streams until that millennial day when it will be safe to once again swim in the white man's waters. And Barrowhorn, the magpie, he has of course survived the best of all. More than any other creature, Barrowhorn has survived and adapted to the coming of the white man. At home on the edge of bush and paddock, or in parks and gardens, Barrowhorn can still be heard piping with incomparable beauty. He can be heard early in the mornings greeting the sunrise, and sometimes he can be heard on moonlight nights piping a lonely call to the moon, which always comes to life again.